I'm very grateful to be with all of you. Thank you very much for taking so much effort to join us here at Govardhan Eco Village for our Artha Forum. I see dear friends from all over the world, from California, from New Jersey, New York, Singapore, from India. Very inspiring to hear the words that were spoken. Thank you very much. Because Dharma, true spirituality, is for the transformation of our values in our lives. Otherwise, there isn't much substance to the concept of religion, spirituality, or dharma. Transformation is really what everyone is seeking. Because in this world we live in, there's so much suffering, frustration, and so much of it, its core reason is greed, arrogance, envy, anger, selfish lust, and illusion. And unless we address these core diseases, there can't be a real internal fulfillment or transformation in our lives. And the great acharyas or spiritual teachers throughout history tell that simply trying to cover these diseases, such as greed, by material solutions, does not really change the problem. The tendency in human society has always been that in the process of solving a problem without wisdom, we create a solution that in due course of time becomes a far greater problem than the original problem. And to end this cycle, this destructive cycle, spirituality is required. Without a change of heart, there's no real change. We were hearing a few minutes ago about all the complications that technology is bringing human society. Technology, science, like anything, is potentially productive or destructive, purifying or polluting, depending on the state of consciousness of those who use it. We could use technology to guide people toward the highest virtues of pure devotion, or we could use technology to increase, like never before, lust and greed. To help people to understand that unless we control our mind and senses, they are our enemies. But unless we recognize that, then we treat our enemies as our friends. And we make them stronger and stronger and stronger. And we consider the stronger our mind and senses become toward greed and all of these other vices, the more successful we are. But Bhagavad Gita addresses this principle. When we consider darkness to be light, illusion to be truth, irreligion to be religion, then not only do we suffer in course of time, but we lead others in the same way. Prahlad tells in Srimad Bhagavatam, and Jesus tells in the Bible, same analogy. When the blind lead the blind, they both fall in the ditch. So what is vision? What is real leadership? This is very important, because all of us, on one level or another, are leaders. And with that comes a great responsibility. And dharma means to spiritually grow and to grow in every other way through taking that responsibility seriously. And knowledge, wisdom is important so that we know where to go and how to get there. And so that we know what is the pitfalls and how to avoid them. We see in our Vedas that people of all walks of life have truly been spiritual leaders. An example is Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was a king. Incredible responsibility for a king. He has to tax the citizens. He has to defend the citizens with military and armies and police. He has to provide for the society. But what was his spirit? Maharaj Yudhisthira considered himself to be the servant of everyone. He considered every person, human, animal, plants, Mother Earth, whatever their race or caste or everything, he considered them his own children. Even more than that, he considered them Krishna's children. And he wasn't simply the ruler. He was on behalf of Krishna, taking the responsibility to take care of Krishna's children. On behalf of God, to provide for them, to protect them. To actually open the doors to true happiness for them. In the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Mahabharata, there's an incredible narration of how Yudhisthira Maharaj, when he was actually a king, he went through a lot of trials. Sometimes he's the emperor of the world. Sometimes he's exiled into the forest with nothing. The ruling king at the time, Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana, were blaspheming his name constantly to break everyone's confidence and faith in him, to make him sound like a coward and a criminal and a useless person. 12 years he was living in the jungle with nothing, with his brothers, his wife. And at another time, he was living in a grand palace with authority over the planet. But Yudhisthira Maharaj, his integrity, his dignity, his character, and his devotion were the same in either case. Bhagavad Gita tells, victory or defeat, success or failure, honor or dishonor, happiness or distress, health or disease, all these dualities are coming and going. Like the winter and summer seasons, things change. But But real Dharma is, whatever may come, I have my foundational principles. And those do not move. They do not change with the times. They remain firm. Whether it's a sunny day or a stormy day. And to have that foundational commitment to truth, to devotion, to compassion, to God, is real leadership. Yudhisthira Maharaj did not give in to envy or arrogance in any situation because he loved Krishna. The Bhagavatam tells, when you water the root of the tree, that water extends to every part of the tree. Aham sarvasya prabhavam atta sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. That the one God, the absolute truth, the Father, the Mother of all beings, speaking Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything comes from me. So when we actually awaken that inherent, dormant love for Krishna, love for God that is within all of us, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Saravalokameheshwara, then naturally we see everything in the light of truth. Everything becomes natural again. We see that everything is God's property. And I'm a custodian. I'm a caretaker. It's not mine. Ownership means control. And ultimately, we really don't have much control of anything except our perceptions. We have those choices. If we own land, money, family, business, then nothing can take it away. But by the power of time, either in our life or at the time of death, everything will be taken away. So really, do we have ownership? And in today's world, health is even so unpredictable. In previous ages, people were quite confident they'd live to a certain age. But according to the American Medical Association, practically half of all males will have some sort of cancer in their lifetime of the males who are living today. Approximately one third of all females will have some sort of cancer. And a more destructive force than cancer is heart disease. And one of the rising problems in the world is depression. In India, diabetes is growing like anything and killing people. What to speak of malaria, and what to speak of all the nuclear bombs that are being developed in all kinds of nations, and what to speak of the unstable minds of many governments who have those nuclear bombs. So things are quite uncertain. But there are things that are certain. Jayate Mriyate Vakadachyat, that the soul is eternal. It's never born and it never dies. We are not these bodies that are so subjected to suffering and death. We are the eternal soul. And wherever there's life, there is an eternal soul. And on that spiritual level of who we really are, we all have relationship. We're all children of the same truth, the same God. And when we connect to Krishna within ourselves, then naturally, like Yudhisthira Maharaj, we see it's a beautiful world when we understand that for whatever little time we're living, God has blessed us, whether it's with a lot or a little. The real joy of life is how we use it. Hanuman was very strong. He was lifting mountains to build a bridge in the service of Ram for the protection of Sita and for the well-being of all beings. And a little squirrel was just kicking some sand. And Ram told Hanuman, the squirrel is doing as much as you. Whatever little or much we have, if we use it in a spirit of devotion, if we use it with this understanding that everything is God's property and everyone is a child of God, we are caretakers. Seva. Seva means to serve with love, without selfishness or greed. To serve with pure motives. That is seva. So with this understanding, Maharaj Yudhisthira was leading. And at a certain time, he wanted to perform this Rajasuya sacrifice. It's a puja, but it's the most difficult puja that anyone could perform. Because everyone on earth has to accept your superior position before you could do this puja. So I don't think anybody could do it today. Maharaj Yudhisthira called Krishna and said, there's only one reason I want to perform this puja. I don't want to just be seen as a great emperor and king. Because I've been on the forest, I know how temporary things are, and I know I'm going to die. And I just want to do good for the people. I want to do good for the people by providing a leadership and an organization where there's prosperity that is not biased against anyone, where everyone is fairly given an opportunity to grow. I want to provide for the citizens' values, where they really understand what is happiness and what is the purpose of life. And especially, he wanted people to know that as the king, my only purpose and my motivation for all the sacrifices I'm doing for everyone is samsidhyarhati toshana. Because I love God. And that's what I want to share with everyone. Yes, I want them to have prosperity. I want them to have health. I want them to have a fair government that protects them in every way. But most of all, I want them to experience the joy of the love of God that's within them, beyond sectarian conceptions. So this Rajasuya Yajna, there's a particular place in it called Agra Puja, where the most important person in the world is honored. And Krishna, I want all the kings throughout the world and all the citizens and everyone to know that in my heart, you are the most important. Unless I teach people by my example how to love God and how to be an instrument of God's compassion, then I'm not really giving them something valuable. So he did that. He performed that yajna specifically to lead people in the right direction. Because in today's world, so-called love of God can make a person very hateful and envious and insecure. That has nothing to do with God. Love of God, it makes one so happy and so peaceful and so loving within that in whatever we do, we want to share that. And the situations of this world will not change our spirit. That's what kind of leader he was. He was there for everyone. Ranti Dev, he was also a king. And he showed by his example, he was literally willing to die just to help a person who was, by caste estimation, an untouchable. And a pack of dogs. He was willing to give up his life to save them, to help them live. And that was for real. Why would a king be willing to die and give up his life for some dogs or a person totally rejected by society? Because he saw God in their hearts. He was feeling himself servant of the servant. And because he was like that, the entire kingdom was God conscious. There was practically no such thing as greed or envy or arrogance or poverty in his entire kingdom. Because he set the standard of what's really important. This is the great responsibility of a parent. Our wife, our husband, our children are God's sacred property entrusted in our care. To not only provide physically, but to provide emotionally and spiritually so that they have real, true, holistic happiness and purpose in life. And in today's world, people who have money are so much ruling. I really don't know much about politics. To be very honest with you, when I was growing up in the United States of America, the voting age was 21. And I left to become a sadhu when I was 19. So I've never voted in my life. You may think that's good or bad, but that's just the way it is. I've never cast a ballot of a vote in my life for politics. So I'm not politically good, I mean, as far as my awareness. And financially, as I have said, I haven't had a bank account or signed a check since 1969. And I think my checking account was about $27 when I left for India. I haven't had a job since 1969 either. I was working for $1.25 an hour. So I can't claim to be such an authority on these subjects. But in America, there's a big craze about Donald Trump.
I think that's true. Sixth sense. You're talking about Donald Trump just now.
Must be your influence. But he's really a sensation. The news media in America and the world talks more about him than anybody else or anything else. Yes? He's a wealthy person. Well, you know, whether he wins or not, that's another thing. That's a whole nother subject. But why is he just so popular among so many people? Because a lot of people see that he's a politician that isn't under the control of people with money. Yes? Because people really see that that's a problem. So many policies, politicians around the world. You know, to get an office, they have to oblige themselves to the people who give them money to do that. And therefore, you really aren't independent. You're a servant of the rich. You're not a servant of the people. So he doesn't need money from anyone. He has it. So therefore, he says what he wants to say. And I'm definitely not going to defend what he says. But it's obvious why people like him. Because they know that he's not controlled by the forces of money of other people, because he has his own. So money is very powerful. The whole concept of capitalism is people with wealth have the greatest power. And that's why this Art Forum is very important. Because power requires responsibility, how we use it. If we're selfish, if we're greedy, if we're arrogant, if we're lusty, then there's no way we could use our wealth except to focus on satisfying all of that. So in the Vedic ages, we find so many examples of kings, how they changed the world by their love of God, because they had power. Well, in today's world, with the capitalistic societies all over, it's people with money who actually have that responsibility, because they control the kings. In the Vedic culture, money is sometimes called Lakshmi. Lakshmi is the goddess of fortune. She's the Ladini Shakti, the pleasure potency of the Lord. And Lakshmi is always engaged in the loving service of Narayan. Sita is Lakshmi. Ravana stole her away because he wanted to enjoy her for himself. And Hanuman, the great devotee, his whole life was trying to bring Sita back to Ram. And Ravana's whole life was to enjoy Sita for himself and kill Ram. Two different mentalities. So are we going to be influenced by Ravana or Hanuman? That's a question we have to ask if we want to actually grow in our lives. Because all the wealth, all the property, all the knowledge, all the scientific breakthroughs, they are all Lakshmi. It's her energy. Knowledge, wealth, skills, they are sacred. Especially wealth is sacred. And when we understand that purpose and use our wealth for a sacred purpose, then we're actually living in harmony with the truth. So Artha Forum is an organization, a sangam of like-minded people from various religions, from various countries, who really believe in certain core principles. That the joy of our life is how we share what God has given us. For the economic, emotional, and spiritual welfare of others. We chant God's names, this Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It's really a good investment. Because I know there's a lot of investment banking type people here. But it's investing in our own souls, our own hearts. It's investing in a life of joy, of love, that's beyond birth and beyond death. If someone were to tell you, you invest in my company, and I assure you, you're going to lose everything. Most of you would not do that. Somebody else says, you can invest in my company and I give you an unconditional guarantee you will never lose anything. It will be forever. That would be good. Well, life is like that. Because all the things that we work so hard for, 100% we're going to lose it all. But the love that's within our heart, the peace, the joy that's within our heart, it's the very nature of our soul, can never be taken away by anything, even time itself. So why not invest some of our time in that? Does that mean I'm supposed to end? You sure? Anyway, I guess that's a reconfirmation of what I'm saying. It's a wake-up call. So to make that investment, chanting God's names, offering our prayers, having satsang with people who really inspire us toward these goals are so important. That's the purpose of temples. Not just to go and feel lucky, but to actually make an inner connection with God, who's in the temple and who's within our hearts. And then to be an instrument of that compassion in whatever we do. Our Govardhan Eco Village, we're trying not only to demonstrate in our own humble ways here these principles, but they're principles not only of the environment, but of life. This building, each one of these bricks, they're supposed to survive for centuries, these bricks. They're made out of about 90% just the dirt from our ground, mixed with a few other little natural things, and then pressed, and then put in the sun to dry. And they're actually very beautiful. But actually, when we think about it, we walk on the ground all the time. But when we understand the opportunity from this ground, we could make bricks, we could make homes. We can show the world something very, very valuable. Something that's environmentally very necessary. So the most common thing is we just walk on the ground. But to see the potential of what's there. What is the potential within ourselves? What is the potential of like-minded people who really want to live as leaders of Dharma? It's quite incredible. My guru, Srila Prabhupada, he was once asked, how did you start this movement? Because just this year is the 50th anniversary of when he boarded the boat Jaladuta. He had 40 rupees. He didn't have a single acquaintance outside of India. And after 38 days on a cargo ship, he arrived in America. He had this treasure of bhakti, of devotion, of love, of compassion that he wanted to share. He was 70 years old. And the first people that came to learn from him were the youth of America from the counterculture, who were not considered very valuable within the society. In fact, they were considered rejects of the society. And he made them incredibly valuable, teachers of millions. So he said, as an answer to this question, how did you start this movement? He said, just like a businessman, he's walking down a pathway and he sees an old, dried up, discarded pumpkin or gourd. And he picks it up. Nobody else wants it. You can't eat it. It's discarded. It's dried up. He picks it up. And he walks down the road a little more. And he sees a branch of a tree. He picks it up. Goes down the road a little more. He sees a wire. Somebody just threw this useless wire away. He picked it up. And he nailed the gourd to the stick, and then he strung the wire across it and made a musical instrument. Thrum, thrum, thrum. And he made it look nice, and he sold it. And with the money he got from that, he made more musical instruments, and he became a millionaire making musical instruments. Because he saw the potential in things that were just on the side of the road. He said, that's how I started this movement. All of you were pretty useless. That's what he said about us. I'm not saying that about you. He said, all of you were quite useless. But I saw the spiritual potential in all of you, and I brought you together. And now, you know, there's a worldwide movement. And Govardhan Eco Village is part of that. So it's really important for all of us to help share our realizations, our experiences, our wisdom of how to see the potential within ourselves, within others, within whatever we have, even within what we don't have. And to understand how to serve that potential. So I'm very, very grateful to each and every one of you. Some of you Sushant and Lakshmi, Ran, Lakshmi Kant is, yeah, and your name again? Sanjeev. And of course the other Sanjeev, Rajiv. These wonderful people have really been truly leaders, trying to orient their lives by understanding, by going deeper and deeper into the potential within themselves. The potential to love, to be compassionate, to be an instrument of a higher power than ourselves, and to really make the world physically, emotionally, and spiritually a better place. And that's where the joy and the meaning of life really is. To show by our example our children, our friends, our colleagues, and the whole world, the inherent beauty of life. Is there any questions? Yes.
I will go back to the Ronald Trump.
The statement which he gave that he would not allow any Muslims into America for a couple of years till he settles down. And the ratios, I heard that about 39% of Americans supported him. And apart from that, the Russian president, Mr. Putin, he has also supported him. And he said it's the right thing. Would you just shed a little light on this, that is this is the right statement or is the biased statement?
Hare Krishna. One thing I've learned, 65 years of living in this world and 46 years of being a sadhu, is to speak about what I know about. And I'm not so expert at immigration. The reason I gave the analogy of Donald Trump is not about what he says. Oh. It's about why people are not following him because he says that. People are following him because they're tired of politicians who can't make decisions because of people with money who control them. Even if he says crazy things, they'd rather have somebody saying crazy things who's speaking from their heart than under the control of people who are buying them off. Huh? I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm just saying that's what America has come to. Huh? But the reason really I said that is that just puts so much responsibility on people who have wealth, because they do have so much power and control. You know, as far as I could see, the things he says are really irrational. I'm not a Democrat or Republican. But one thing is his power isn't in his intellect. His power is not in his spiritual intuition. His power is in his money. Yes? If he ran a shoe store on the Lower East Side, would he be running for president?
No.
But because he's a multi-millionaire, he's running for president, and he doesn't need anybody's help. He doesn't care what anybody says. He's just going to speak what he thinks. And he's going to speak what he thinks the people want to hear too. Huh? Whether he even believes it, I don't even know. So no, I don't believe that we should be discriminating against people because of their caste or their religion or their sex or their any of these other things, their economic situation. The whole concept of America is, you know, the only people that really indigenous were the American Native Indians, and, you know, all of us kind of took over. Yes. So Srila Prabhupada gave simple principle that as long as we're just thinking only in terms of my nation and your nation, there will never be united nations, because we all have our own very vested interests. The solution is when we understand that everything is God's property and everyone is God's child. You know, we serve a man, we spend a fortune giving shampoo baths once a week to our dogs, and then we slaughter cows. If you go to our eco-village and you sit down and play with the calves, you'll see that they're really life-loving people. And so are dogs. But why do we discriminate? Why do we discriminate? Because I like dogs, therefore I will protect them. Anti-cruelty for animals, and I'll stand up for that while I'm eating cows. So you see, the principle is, you know, that human beings have so many reasons and so many justifications and so many philosophies to discriminate. And when we understand that all nations everywhere is God's property, and every person is a child of God, because the solutions create bigger problems than the original problem. So this on one level may be a solution, but it'll probably create a bigger problem than the original problem. Yes? Because there's no wisdom. Because we're not able to see the larger picture. Because we're not able to actually access the wisdom and the compassion of our own souls. Everyone's groping in the dark, trying to find light. And people in darkness claim that their darkness is light. And the world believes them. When our Guru Prabhupada saw a hoarding, a billboard in the 1960s, it was about this cigarette called Kool. And there was a beautiful man and a beautiful woman, and they're standing under a waterfall smoking, and there's nice trees and just like heaven. And it said in big letters, refreshingly cool, smoke cool. And Prabhupada said, look what they're doing. They're telling people, you suck in fire and it's cool. And people believe them. Yes, people believe them. If you use this toothpaste, you know, your wife will love you, your husband will take care of you, your children will be really happy, you'll make a lot of money. That's the impression. So people buy the toothpaste. It's subconscious. Advertising is very much controlled by psychiatrists and psychologists who are just, you know, teaching these corporations how to somehow or other control people's minds to buy. That's good if we're giving them something good. But if we're just trying to get their money and then we don't know what to do with their money, we use it for our own purposes without really understanding that it's entrusted to us. So it's It's really important that we have a larger, holistic picture. And that begins with understanding, who am I? And what is this world? How I can actually really make a difference. So Mr. Donald Trump, whatever he says, there's a certain sector of people who will, even if they don't agree with what he says, they'll like it because at least they know it's what he believes. To some extent. Huh? And that's the condition of the world. There's a serious leadership problem. But every single one of us have the responsibility to be a leader in our small ways or big ways, whatever it may be. Does that answer your question?
Yes. But I would like to share one beautiful when you share about the advertisement.
Take you to heaven. I was so surprised with this warning. So this kind of a thing, people do believe, as you said so rightly. I'll conclude with that. Somebody else want to
talk? Swamiji, I have a question.
So we are now seeing certain religious leaders get into business, like Patanjali has gone into consumer business and has become a very big business. Shri Shri Ravi Shankar is coming out with his range of products. You know, we see Sadhguru Jagiji. So do you see a lot of religion now driving business? Like, do you see religion getting directly into business? Because we are suddenly seeing this change.
Because of the extreme dimension of greed and exploitation, there's a polarization where thoughtful people really want to change. But the change, really, in order to really make a difference in the world, it has to be deep and genuine. And that comes when we have genuine compassion. And we need knowledge in order to really have that compassion. Srila Prabhupada gave an example of a boy, little boy, he had typhoid. And the doctor said he cannot eat solid foods or he will die. But the boy was really hungry. He was telling his mother, "Give me rotis." And the mother said, no, I cannot get any." He was crying, "Give me roti. Why do you hate me? I hate you because you hate me because you're not giving me rotis." So she gave him rotis out of compassion. And he died. Is that compassion? So real compassion has to be based on knowledge. And that's what Bhagavad Gita and the great scriptures are giving us, and the great saints are giving us knowledge of how to live. So yes, there is various movements throughout the world who really, and there always have been, but as things are polarizing, it's coming more into the public focus of people who really want to generate funds for a higher purpose. And I see with people like Rajiv and Sanjeev, literally, most of what you see in this eco-village is the generosity of their families. And they want nothing in return. And even if we want to put their names and plaques somewhere, they won't even let us. because they don't want fame. They don't just want tax reliefs, although they may get some, but that's not their purpose. They want to raise people's consciousness on so many levels. Our temple in Radha Gopinath is so much, it was a completely a ghetto scene. It was totally dilapidated. But, you know, Rajiv and his families, they decided 50% of what we get we're going to use for the upliftment of humanity and spiritual upliftment. And because the temple became so vibrant, from that, Bhaktivedanta Hospital came, midday meals, 310,000 children being fed every day from that little temple, Govardhan Eco Village, schools, and what to speak of so much spiritual education. And so much of the reason that's happening is because monks who have forsaken everything, and people in business and technology, who are actually really enthusiastic and determined to make a lot so they can share a lot. What a beautiful life that is. What an example that is. So to form such types of businesses with those purposes when we come together is a wonderful contribution and a wonderful example. As far as the specific businesses that you're talking about, I don't know that much about, you know, the different organizations, but the principle is something wonderful. Do you like to say something, Rajiv or Sanjeev? Interestingly, Govardhan Eco Village, whatever we see here is, it's called symbiotic. Understanding that there is no waste. Waste is just ignorance of understanding something's value. This symbiotic biotechnology is, after you flush your toilet, usually it's considered waste. That's kind of an extreme form of waste that we all, you know, when you flush your toilet, do you feel any, I don't want to flush because I don't want to lose this good thing. It's just immediately flush it. No, there's no attachment. Yes, there's an attachment to get rid of it. So it's an extreme kind of waste, sewage. Our own, others. But there's value. There's value in everything if we understand it. We just have to see the potential and untap it and utilize it. And how everything is symbiotic means it's everything has a harmony with everything else. And to understand that spiritually, environmentally, on every level is very important. So here at Govardhan Eco Village, we have PhDs and people with master's degrees from IIT. The person who makes the menus for your food is an IIT engineer. Persons who are who helped with our making cow dung into methane fuel. He has a PhD from Penn State University. He's a monk. Gauranga Prabhu, graduated from IIT. Vasudev Prabhu, who's helping with all the engineering of everything, graduated from IIT. So these people, they're monks, they're brahmacharis. They could have very, very high-paying jobs anywhere in the world if they wanted to do that. But they really want to give their lives. And then you have people like Rajiv and Sanjeev and Dr. Desai and Mr. Mafalao and Mr. Piramal and these people who are very, very much in the world. But they're working intimately together to do beautiful things. And here at the Eco Village, all of these very highly educated engineers and scientists, they're working with the simple villagers. Many of them don't even have an education, but they have a lot of experience and knowledge. And these technologies are a combination of village common sense and modern science. The villagers and the scholars. It's not that one is thinking I'm better than you or you're better than me. We all have something very valuable to offer. Let's work together. The people who've renounced everything and have nothing, and the people who are extremely successful and dynamic within the world of finance or whatever. We have people from the police, people, everybody's working together for a common cause. And whatever we've done here is very small, but how we're trying to do it, of seeing the value in each other from a spiritual, economic, social perspective, is the basis of this community. And I believe it's a really important message to the world. Yes, this lady, okay.
Yes, sir. In our lives, and Artha Forum, the main principle also is to get rid of greed. And greed is a root of all, some I will say. What is the boundary of greed? If our karma, we feel, is to work in a profession which thrives on greed. For example, as a banker, as a stockbroker, people believe that it's making money out of money, and that's the way it is. If there is no greed in Wall Street, there cannot be a stock market. It cannot be a stock market. Hence, what is the boundary? How do we know that if people, as you said, have wealth and it's sacred, how do we know it's sacred wealth that I have earned? Or is a wrong kind of wealth I have earned? Or even if I earned a particular amount of wealth, what should I do about it? And when exactly should I know that this is the boundary? I should not go beyond this. This is the dilemma I have.
Thank you. It begins with asking the question, which you have done. The concept of guru is people who have these higher connections and this higher knowledge. And the downfall of society, and we see it in all the various religions, in all the continents historically, is when the Brahmins or the spiritual leaders become corrupt, then people lose their faith, and then there's no real foundational standards of how to answer these questions. So it is important that the guru, the sadhu, the shastra, the spiritual teachers, the line of great teachers throughout history, and the scriptures, when we understand the essence of that, then it becomes natural to understand what the boundaries are. Essentially, there's a difference between enthusiasm, to earn and greed. Hanuman was angry, but his anger saved so many people, because he was angry with Ravana. And Ravana was angry, but his anger was to exploit. So the negative concept of greed is when, for our own selfish purposes, we're willing to exploit others and even cause harm to others for me and for mine. That greed is dangerous. But the enthusiasm to earn, to earn with integrity, to actually spend with compassion, that is not greed. That is seva. Let's use the example of Bhagavad Gita. It's spoken in the context of Mahabharata. So you have Duryodhana on one side, and you have Yudhisthira and Arjuna on the other side. And if you look at the battle, they're basically doing the same thing. They both have their chariots, they both have their weapons, they both have their clubs and their bows and arrows, and they're both making the same kind of decisions of how to organize their military phalanxes and making different formations and designs to win. They were both extremely, intensely committed to win. Yes? So if we don't understand the inner teachings and story of Mahabharata, if we just look at the battlefield, we see they both intensely want to win, and they're all doing the same thing. But what was the difference between Arjuna and Duryodhana? Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, and it was heard by all of them. Arjuna listened. Duryodhana didn't. Duryodhana was willing to exterminate people for his own selfish purposes. He wanted power. He wanted wealth. He wanted enjoyment. Especially power was his obsession. And Yudhisthira wanted to serve. He wanted to serve God. He wanted to win the war so he could uplift humanity. Duryodhana wanted to win the war so that he could stay in power and keep exploiting others. Yes? So even though they were doing the same thing and they had the same intensity to be successful, one was greed and one was compassion. I have known Rajiv for many, many years. This personality is so busy, it's unbelievable. He travels all over the world. And he's really a busy man. He's motivated. And it's to earn. What does he do with what he earns? He earns with integrity and he spends with compassion. And he's affecting, directly or indirectly, hundreds and thousands of people's lives. And he's finding such joy and happiness doing it, he wants to share this with others. And Sanjeev also, he was the employee of the year for an international corporation. And he was growing and expanding. But he decided to take this role because he wanted to make a difference in the world. He's not a monk. His son is here. He has a wife and a daughter. To balance balance this passion with compassion is the difference between exploitative greed and very healthy enthusiasm to succeed. Does that answer your question? Whenever I go to Shushant's house in Namrita, it's always such a special pleasure in Silicon Valley. So many beautiful people come because they, you know, from Odisha, Bhubaneswar, Jagannath Puri, they have this very deep devotion to Jagannath Krishna in their hearts, and in the association of such like-minded people, it's like a fire that's growing, the fire of compassion, of devotion, of dharma, and to share Krishna's grace. It's the most beautiful opportunity we all have. I think last question, please.
Sometimes, you know, we see so much of suffering. We see so much of suffering around us, and it moves us, and we feel we really want to do something, but the surrounding is not so, or sometimes we are not able to do something. So, what can we do at our level to bring a change, like as a housewife or a dentist or whatever small position that we have?
When we see the magnitude of the corruption and the suffering of this world, it could be really discouraging. What can I do about this? What can I do about this? And sometimes people build a little bubble around themselves so they don't really know what's going on in the world. But how much political exploitation is going on in the world. Genocide, poverty, disease, abuse. It's quite rampant throughout the planet. And little swamis like me, we travel around a lot, we see. We really see a tremendous amount of suffering. So we may be a housewife, we may be a teacher, we may be in business, we may be swamis. What can we do about it? Srila Prabhupada gave an analogy of a little sparrow, and she had eggs with her little children in those eggs. But she was taking care of it very nicely as a good mother. And then the ocean came, because she laid her eggs in the shore and took the eggs away. And she was so committed to get those eggs back out of her motherly compassion. She demanded the ocean to give the eggs back. But what does the ocean have to... Why should an ocean take seriously a sparrow? So she vowed, if you don't give my eggs back, I will dry you up till there's no water left. And with her little tiny beak, she picked up one drop and flew to a distant place and put it. And she picked up another drop and flew to another place and dropped it. And then she picked up another drop and... How many drops are in the ocean? So the ocean didn't pay attention, but she was committed out of motherly compassion. Garuda, the king of birds. In Jagannath Puri, there's Garuda Stamba. We get Garuda's blessings before approaching Lord Jagannath. Garuda came down because he saw the determination of this mother to try to make a difference. And he said to the ocean, if you don't give her eggs back, I will dry you up. And ocean immediately gave the eggs back. So the idea is there's a higher power than ourselves. And in whatever way we can make a difference, we're doing something very great. Sam Siddhir Hari Toshanam. If we are pleasing Krishna, if we are pleasing God by the sincerity of our efforts and our determination, then that's the glory of our lives. And we can attract a higher power to actually make a difference. And that's the beauty of life. Not that we can change everything, but we change ourselves in such a way that we're sensitive. Paradukha dukhi. We do feel for those who are suffering, and we're trying to make a difference. And we may be one little person or two little people, but if we're sincere, so many other little people will take it seriously. And that's the glory of our life. Srila Prabhupada, he was a 70-year-old person with no money who came to the West with compassion. And after a few years, tens and millions of Bhagavad Gitas were distributed. Tens and thousands of followers, temples, communities. And Srila Prabhupada would say, he would say to people in India, I wish this one Indian, 70 years old with nothing, who just wanted to make a difference. And he said, all of you could do this. What to speak if we all work together? See what one person could do. He didn't want us to think, you know, he's the acharya, he could do it, but nobody else. He would use himself in his example. You're young, you're strong, you have wealth. I had nothing. But I had compassion and I tried to make a difference. How much you should make a difference, how much you could make a difference. And if we all come together. So we should feel sad to see other people suffering, but we should never be discouraged. Because the great opportunity and the great beauty of life is we can earn with integrity and spend with compassion. We could learn to love God and share that love with others. Srila Prabhupada's message was, if people come in contact with their souls, then naturally they will, whatever field they'll be in, they'll make solutions. And he gave this great gift of the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, which is sadhana, spiritual practice. And he gave satsang. He gave people opportunity to associate with enlightening, inspiring people. And he taught us how to live with character, sadachar. And if we put these three together, satsang, sadhana, and sadachar, good company, like-minded company with a higher value, spiritual practice that we give special time to every day, and living with integrity, we can make a big difference. So we should be grateful. We should be grateful for what we have and grateful. And our gratitude is to use what we have in harmony with who has given it. That means to be an instrument of God's compassion. That's the beauty of the Artha Forum. That's the beauty of life. Thank you very much.